Hi, friends. Welcome to the Scripture Society podcast, where we help women on their journey of knowing and loving Jesus more and more every day. Our hope is that we can help you tell a more beautiful story and grow in your knowledge of the one who wrote it.
Hi, Kylie.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good. I'm excited. Episode six.
Episode six. That is so crazy.
I know.
It's been a second since we've recorded, but I'm grateful to get back into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited.
Really enjoyed talking about beauty.
Like, I know. It's been fun.
There's nothing more fun to talk about than beauty.
Yeah. I feel like we've had some good topics. I've enjoyed like the different conversations.
Yeah, me too. And I think that, I don't know, I haven't thought about beauty as being like, an underlying value that we can kind of measure things against.
Yeah.
I always kind of thought that it was like, oh, that's pretty sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it really is like a force and a value that we can use to
deeper
see the Lord in everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question that's kind of random, but I think it's on brand for Scripture Society.
Oh, well, good. Hit me with it.
What is, if you could give people one museum recommendation, what would it be?
Absolutely, it would be the Isabella Stewart Garden Museum of Boston. I feel really passionately about this museum. I love it for so many reasons. It just has, I don't want to spoil all of it for you because so much of the fun of this museum is like learning the history of it.
Yeah.
But I will also just say there is a bit of mystery with this museum. There is an art heist documentary about it on Netflix.
Man, and if that doesn't sell you, I don't know what will.
So let me just say there's art, there is like incredible history, and then there's also a unsolved mystery attached. So it's like, why
is it
would you
still
not?
Unsolved?
Yes.
Okay, that's crazy.
I know.
Thought they solved it.
No, literally, it's crazy. So anyways, but the museum by itself is just incredible. It's not your typical art museum. That's why I love it.
Surprise. The heist was performed by us. Kylie has all of the paintings in her room.
I don't
right
even
now.
Think I was alive when the heist happened. Or if I was, I was like two. But
like, I think that we could pull off a heist.
You maybe could.
No, I would need you to be like in the van, like doing all security cameras.
I can do the van.
You can have the van. You can be the van girl.
Yeah, I can be the van girl. Oh my gosh. Yeah, but anyways, that's such a good one. It's in Boston if you ever go.
It's a good rec.
Yeah, it's a good one. What
I
about you?
I love that it's a garden too. I think I had never been to New York before until probably about 2 months ago, I guess. And we went to my number one museum that I wanted to go to was the Morgan Library Museum.
Mm.
And it is the full collection of our friend J.P. Morgan. Mm. And it's really interesting because I didn't realize that he was super into, what's it called?
Archaeology.
Yes. Archaeology. I keep on wanting to call it anthropology, but it's not. It's archaeology. And he actually funded a lot of the really pivotal digs in the Middle East.
That's so cool.
And he has a collection of scrolls too, like scrolls from different empires, which is wild.
Wow.
And it's cool too, just to like kind of see. I don't know, when I heard scroll in the Bible, I just didn't picture
an actual scroll,
like an actual like tiny little metal thing that they used as like a writing device. And so it was just kind of cool to see. And
yeah, that's really cool.
The architecture is inspired by all the European castles, and so when you're in there, it's like floor to ceiling historic books, antique books, rare books. There's like a vault that's full of the most rare books ever.
That's crazy.
It's so crazy. And it doesn't feel like you're in the United States. It feels like you're in some sort of like European
mansion
somewhere. So that one's a fun one. And also I feel like it's a little bit less known than like the Met.
Right.
Or some other of the really popular ones, which are wonderful. You should go to the Met.
Yeah. But popular for a reason, but
for sure. But it's kind of nice to get away from the crowds a little bit too.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's cool. I've been to New York, but I haven't done many museums in New York, so.
And it's the best part of New York.
I want to do that.
Well, no, I think the food is good too.
There's so many good parts. So it's just like,
I think we should take a girls trip.
There's just like the urge I have to like go for like a short period of time for like just fun, and then also the urge to go for like a long period of time because there's so much to
do. There's so much. Maybe we should take a society trip.
For research.
And we frog around all the museums and we eat all the good food.
Oh, I know.
And so we lounge in Central Park.
Lounge, yes.
And we go to all the vintage shops and drink all the coffee.
It'd be so good.
Okay, great. I'll get planning on it.
Stay right tuned. Now. Fine. We'll do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, we are not talking about New York museums today.
Unfortunately. Just
we
kidding.
Are talking about the beauty of truth and morality,
ooh,
which may seem a little surprising. It is a bigger topic, yeah. A less defined topic.
It's a little abstract. It's a little philosophical. Yeah. We might go off on some rabbit trails, so yeah. Just bear with us.
Yeah, bear with us. But we do think it's an important conversation, especially for our current moment.
Yeah.
So we're excited to talk about it, kind of work through some things together, and ultimately, hopefully, encourage you guys to have similar conversations. So yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should like start with defining what truth and morality are, just because I think those are two words that we use often,
mm-hmm.
but it's always helpful to know, like, what do we actually mean when we say that?
Yeah. And it's increasingly more difficult to define,
right,
these
hard
things,
to define
today than maybe it has been in recent history.
Yeah.
So I'll give it my best shot.
Yeah, go for it.
And then you can check the actual dictionary to see if I'm right. I would define morality in like the most neutral terms of like the underlying value system that you use to make your decisions,
mm-hmm.
and the things that determine your behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like you act in according to your desires, mm-hmm. but when you act outside of your desires, oftentimes it's because of a value system, mm-hmm. or like a goal you're trying to work towards. And so it's like the thing that determines your behaviors, mm-hmm. and decisions.
Yeah. Or like maybe like your sense of right and wrong.
Yeah, that's like a simpler way to put it. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's not always easily defined that way.
For
but
sure.
But I would say like generally that is like the understood maybe sense of it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. No, so what about truth? Which that feels like such a hard word to define. So let me just say that before you give it a shot. Like,
oh gosh, I think I would say truth is, it can be tested against reality.
Mm.
Like it's descriptive of something that aligns with reality.
Yeah.
Whether it's like an idea or a statement or, I don't know, a philosophy. In order for it to be true, which, mm-hmm. I know I'm using true in the definition, but in order for it to be true, like it has to align with reality.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like that is as close as you're going to get without using the word true, which if you Google it, they use the word true.
Because so we did.
That so feels like a cop-out, Google. But
Webster, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I would agree with those. So, okay. So, morality, sense of right and wrong. Truth is kind of like, you know, what we, reality.
Yeah,
basically.
A characteristic of reality,
right.
Or something that aligns with reality.
So for Christians, we would say that our sense of truth and morality come from the Bible.
Yes. And also, I think the character of God.
Right.
But I think the Bible primarily.
Right. Which we see those kind of go hand in hand,
mm-hmm.
right? We know the character of God from what we see in the Bible. And then we also have more explicit, mm-hmm. like, forms of truth and morality in the Bible, like in the law or like Sermon on the Mount, where the, mm-hmm. Bible is explicitly saying, like,
yeah,
this is the right way to do something.
Yeah. And the person of Jesus, when the word became flesh, like, mm-hmm. when the words of God became a person.
Yeah.
Like, truth was sort of embodied in the person of Jesus, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think all of those things. But if someone were not a Christian, why would you, or, like, how would you explain to them why you believe the Bible is true? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah. No, that's a good question. So, somebody who doesn't believe in the Bible and they're asking me why I believe it,
or even someone who's just kind of neutral, someone's just asking, yeah. you like
genuinely interested.
Okay, genuinely interested,
right?
You're a Christian, you operate on the Bible, this like ancient text,
mm-hmm.
why do you think the Bible is true?
Mm-hmm. I would say, and this is, I'm seriously, this is not a cop-out, I have seen it to be true in my own life.
Okay,
so
tell me more.
I think I could go the fact route, but I feel like what is compelling to me before I became interested in facts and what's compelling to the average person is the fact that, you know, what I see in the Bible as a way to live, I have experienced it to be true that the way that they, the kind of life they're putting forward as the better life, mm-hmm. I have experienced to be the better life.
Mm.
And that is just purely like we're talking morality. I'm not even talking necessarily like salvation yeah. and like, obviously that plays the biggest role in it. But I would say like, if you're just talking like, why do I live the way that I live? It's because I have seen it to be, I truly believe that this is the better way to live
yeah.
because I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you see that in books like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, and even in the teachings of Jesus, them being universally accepted by unbelievers as good principles to live by.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Which I think is so interesting. That's just so interesting for people who just don't, you know, believe in God or don't mm-hmm. even accept the Bible, but they see the truth in it.
Yeah.
You know, they see that like, oh, this is like, there is goodness mm-hmm. in it.
And it's also interesting thinking about specifically the book of Proverbs. There's a lot of different religious systems and philosophies that have like a sort of book of wisdom or yeah. a book of Proverbs. And they all kind of say the same thing that Proverbs yeah,
really
does.
Similar.
Which is another interesting thing to like see it cross culturally.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like there's something inside of all of us.
Right.
That even though we're kind of in an age where truth is a little bit more relative mm-hmm. than what it has been in the past, maybe. But like there is something inside of all of us that mm-hmm. sort of has the same common values, generally right. speaking.
Yeah. I love that. That's something C.S. Lewis talks about in Mere Christianity, mm. which the first time I read that, it was just so compelling to me because I'm not really like a logical thinker the way that that book is formatted. So it was really helpful to me to like kind of show me, oh, these are ways that you can think about mm-hmm. your faith. Kind of challenged me in some really helpful ways. And one of the things that he kind of says is one of the ways that we can be persuaded to logically believe that there is a God is the fact that human beings have a moral compass.
Mm, yeah.
And it really is true when you think about it. It's like, why would we have a generally shared sense of right and wrong if there was no intentional creator?
Yeah.
It just logically doesn't make sense.
No, it's
to
true.
Me, right?
Because when you think about even like Darwinism mm-hmm. or any of the other, even like when you look at nature and how yeah. animals operate in the world, like they just be killing each other. Like they yeah. just be eating each other and killing each other. And it's totally like the idea that the strong will oppress the weak and right. only the survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
But like the problem with that idea, and that was sort of like the cultural narrative before Jesus came on the scene, was mm-hmm. survival of the fittest. Like the strong yeah. would oppress the weak to show strength. And so right. even the idea that, there are human rights that are mm-hmm. inherent to human beings yeah. was a complete flip to mm-hmm. the traditionally accepted ideas at the time.
Yeah.
And so when you think about the alternative to the Christian moral ethic, it's not beautiful.
No.
Like survival of the fittest is not a beautiful idea.
No.
You know, like the idea that there's no intentional creator, that we're all just meaningless, you know, sacks of muscle and skin and bone, and we're just in this sort of like on a rock flying through space, like that yeah. gets dark when yeah. there's like no morality or no purpose or no meaning. And that's sort of the alternative narrative to hey kitty cat Kit decided to join us for this conversation, but like that's the alternative to like the Christian worldview.
Yeah, it is so interesting. And even when you think about like the beauty of truth, why is truth important and why is it beautiful? It's because the Bible talks about this. We were created with truth in our hearts. Like mm-hmm. we know what's true. When it's fully revealed to us,
yeah.
we know, we see the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I don't know, that idea is so interesting. And I feel like you get to see that when unbelievers see certain forms of Christian truth to be beautiful.
Yeah.
And they just maybe haven't been, maybe they're not receptive to the whole Christian truth mm-hmm. being beautiful, if that makes sense. And that's just so interesting to me. I feel like it takes time to see truth as something that's beautiful and not like restrictive.
Yeah.
Almost, you know?
Yeah.
And I would say the same about morality, you yeah. know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, is that I think that where a lot of people who are not Christians or are not familiar with the Bible or even like the beauty of Jesus and his law, I think the number one objective they have to a Christian moral system is that it's restrictive or oppressive.
Yeah.
And so I think that, excuse me, when someone has that objection, you have to kind of take it back to the very beginning and figure out, okay, what is your operating system? Like, what is your moral operating system that you're using to determine that Christianity is an oppressive, excuse me, or restrictive worldview? Because most often in 2024, the operating system that they're using is individual right to do whatever you want at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very common kind of moral system of radical individualism, of like, I kind of determine who I want to be and what I feel is truth, and I'm going to operate off of what I want to do. But anything that goes against that is oppressive or restrictive. Like, that's a very common way to live your life.
Yeah.
But I think the way that Christians can answer that is to show that there is something so much better.
Something better, yeah.
Because that way of living is not beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because it leads you to a path of pain and chaos.
Yeah.
Because human desires are fickle and they're fleeting, and you can't put your faith in them. And if you're acting moment to moment, pleasure to pleasure, eventually you're going to find yourself feeling like life is purposeless or meaningless.
Yeah.
And so I think that, to your point, Christian truth and morality, having something to base your life off of, is the beautiful alternative.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I feel like you can see how beautiful it is when you read a book like Judges.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you were talking, I was thinking like, oh, yeah, and it feels like this is all the way we're seeing the world going, it's all new. And then I'm like, wait, it's so not new.
No.
When you read Judges, the thing that you'll hear repeated over and over again is, and they did what was right in their own eyes.
Mm.
So the whole point of Judges is like, you want to see how bad humanity gets when they just do whatever they want to do. You're talking about some of the most like hard to read stories in the Bible.
Truly.
And it's just us being us.
Yeah. And you're like, right.
It's rough.
Yeah, you're right. And so I think it's easy to be turned off by or freaked out by kind of like some of the new emerging cultural ideas around sexuality and gender and some of these like major cultural pain points. But in reality, it's no worse than anything else that humanity has ever come up with or done. Like, it's no worse than anything else. And so I think that the best way to approach these conversations is actually something that I heard from a podcast. Nancy Piercy is a incredible, brilliant thinker and philosopher. Mm. And she has a book called Total Truth that kind of explains modernism versus postmodernism and sort of like how the history of how we came to the ideology that is widely held today in the West. Anyways, but she said that oftentimes when we talk, when Christians talk about morality, we're talking from a Genesis 3 perspective instead of a Genesis 1 perspective.
Mm.
And what she means by that is we're speaking about humanity and to humanity as if sin was the beginning of our story.
Right.
But sin wasn't the beginning of our story.
Yeah.
God creating us to be in relationship with him, to be beautiful and free to reflect him in the garden. Everything that God created was intended to be good.
Yeah.
And so were we. And so that's a very different conversation if you're coming from that perspective of like, we were intended to be good, but then we were broken by sin.
Yeah.
Instead of coming from a, you are a sinner and like you need Jesus. Like, those are two very different conversations that you can have.
Yeah.
And I think that one is more true than the other.
Mm.
And so when you're having that conversation with someone who maybe doesn't understand the Judeo-Christian moral ethic, when you're starting with, hey, I see you as someone who is created to be good and you are a good creation, but you've been broken by sin and I have a solution for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very different conversation than starting off with a, you're a sinner and you need Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
It's almost like it's still true.
Yeah.
It's just not the whole story.
It's not the whole story, exactly.
Because it's like when we listen to that, we're like, okay, well, they are a sinner, but it's like you're missing context.
Yeah.
In the sense of like, it's not that, oh, God isn't happy with the way that you were born.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were born a bad person, your personality's bad, or whatever it is. But it's like, no, God actually created all of us with intention for something better.
Yes.
And we have just chosen these other things. We have this sin nature. And it's like, you know, it actually, like, gives us a better picture of God's role in it, too.
For sure. And a fuller picture of ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I think that you're exactly right. I think maybe instead of saying like one is more true than the other, I think it's maybe one is more compelling than the other.
Right.
And that I think that people, when you tell them that they're a sinner, they don't feel fully seen because they're like, you don't know me.
I'm a good person.
I'm a good person. I do all these good things, you know, but like giving them the fuller picture of like, you know, and I'm not saying that this is how you should start a conversation with someone who is not a Christian. There is a lot of relationship building that needs to happen. But if someone is genuinely asking you and is curious and open-minded to hear about the Genesis story and kind of like how we get all of the Christian ideas that we have, like starting off with like, you were intended for good. You were made beautifully and intentionally, and then you were broken by sin. And that's kind of why you see the chaos and the brokenness of the world.
Yeah.
But there is like a redemption arc in this. I think that that is a more compelling way to talk about.
Yeah. And I think it maybe, like you said, it feels true because it resonates with reality.
Yes.
That feels more, that is reality. So like it feels like reality.
Yes. It feels more true than just saying like you're a sinner who needs Jesus.
Right.
Which is true.
Yeah.
But maybe not as true as you were created beautifully, intentionally broken by sin. But
and
there's
now
a savior.
And now
you need a savior.
Yeah, that's so good. I think that's helpful. And, you know, moving on from that, I think not always will we have these conversations, right? Not always will that be the way that we get to show the world the beauty of truth and morality.
You're so right. I think, don't start off with that conversation. Yeah.
If you do get to have that conversation, that's incredible. But you know, we're not always getting every single day the opportunity to have, you know, conversations to explain to people our, you know, morality, ethic or whatever. You know, a lot of times the only thing people are seeing are just the way we're living our lives.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I'll just ask you, like, how do you think that we can, with our lives, you know, compel people or show people the beauty of, you know, God's truth and the Bible's sense of morality?
Yeah, I think that's so good. Like, if we're saying that we know the creator of the universe and he has given us instructions on how to live well in his world that he created.
Right.
Then we also have to live well in his world so that people can use our lives to test against our truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if in our lives we are being wise with our money, being generous, being kind, being fair, being people of integrity and righteousness and honor, when you're being kind, when there's no reason to be kind, when we're reflecting all the things of Jesus, oftentimes good things will come to you just by nature of that's how the world operates,
right?
You know, and people will see that and will be able to see like, oh, okay, maybe there is some truth to this. Maybe this is a good way of life. Maybe this is a more beautiful way of living than living for, you know, individualistic temporary pleasure or individualistic desires. And so I think that that is the primary thing. The first thing that you should start with is think about how can you serve the people around you who don't believe the same things that you believe?
Yeah.
How can you serve them so extraordinarily that it doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
that it's nonsensical, that they ask you, why are you doing this thing for me? And then that will open the conversation or could open a more long-term conversation about morality and truth.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think one of the reasons like Christians should be compelled to believe what you just said is that when we look around in our current moment in our world, it can feel like, oh my goodness, like what can we do to help with like the morality problem, with the truth problem?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're discouraged because we feel like, well, the answer to a big problem has to be a big solution.
Yeah.
Like,
only the government can fix it.
That's
or
so true.
Only like the church at large can fix it. And like, I feel like what you're saying is that not that we can fix the whole world problem, but in a very real way, we can aid in the solution by just living it out in our day-to-day lives.
Yes. That's so true. We didn't even get to talk about the misinformation crisis that we're experiencing. That's a whole nother rabbit trail that we don't have time to go down.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's like, you know, all of that aside, all of the chaos that we feel in our culture with misinformation, with some of the jarring ideas that are coming out today, with like globalization mm-hmm. and us having access to every idea that's ever existed at our right. fingertips at all times, it can be easy to be overwhelmed by false cultural narratives.
Yeah.
But how can we as Christians show a more beautiful way of living,
mm-hmm.
a more good, a more true, a more beautiful way of living?
Yeah. It is so interesting. It's just like, you know, and this may be my one practical thing, if I could just encourage you guys with this, it's that if you are somebody who cares about the truth and morality crisis in our culture, you should be someone who knows the truth of the Bible very well.
Yeah.
If you are concerned yes. with this, which
so good.
Hear me say that you should be concerned. Like I believe that Christians should be lovers of truth and lovers of morality. If that is the case, you should know truth more than just, oh, well, I believe that I should be generous or mm-hmm. I believe that I should be kind. Why do we believe that?
Mm-hmm.
We believe that because the God who created us is generous and kind
yeah.
and created us to reflect him in those ways, because that is what will allow us to be the humans we were created to be, humans that can flourish and thrive rather than just survive day to day. So, you know, I feel like that builds up our faith and then gives us a more compelling reason when we do get to have those conversations. Yeah. Why are you always kind? Why are you always generous?
Yeah.
I get to essentially share the gospel just by explaining, oh, well, I just live this way because everything I just said.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let me be the first to say, I don't do this. I don't think deeply enough about my morality or, you know, why I believe what I believe. But I think it's a good challenge, especially right now.
I agree. I think it's more critical now than ever, at least in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And I think that what you said is absolutely true. And I think that if we don't do this, the risk is more people being disillusioned and more people thinking that the Bible isn't true because of the way that Christians behave.
Right.
Because I think that's where a big gap is for a lot of people, is people say, like, the Bible is true and it makes you a good person. But then when they behave in a way that's counter to that, that breaks trust.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's a high calling, but mm-hmm. it's a calling for us to not only be kind and nice and all those things, because like we said, even a non-believer can be kind and nice.
Absolutely.
But what are the ways that we can go above and beyond
mm-hmm.
What makes sense to show the love of Jesus? Because that's the sort of countercultural force Jesus was in his day and age.
Yeah, that's good. And part of it too, relating to what you just said, is when we fail,
mm-hmm.
not covering it up,
yeah,
but being honest and sharing about the grace that we know that we have. I think that's an important just like side note with mm-hmm. that, you know, the reaction of the Christian should never be, oh, well, I have a high view of morality, so when I mess up, I can't let anybody see it because I don't want that to be a bad witness to the world or whatever. You have a better witness.
Yeah.
If you are honest.
When you're a person of integrity.
Yeah.
When you're honest, when you're not required to mm-hmm. be honest.
Yeah. Because when you are honest about your sin, how much bigger does that make God?
Truly.
It just does. So I just feel like, you know, even though it takes swallowing your pride and being humble, it is hard. But you are actually making a stronger witness for the world.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I hope this conversation has been compelling. I know we've only really scratched the surface.
I know.
But all we really want is this to be a Kickstarter for you to have these conversations with your friends, with your family, with your small groups, especially in a time like now. Go and just have a conversation with somebody about why do we believe what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about morality. Talk about truth.
Why is a Christian moral system the best moral system?
Right.
Like, compare it to other things. Like, be curious.
Yeah.
Don't be convinced that the way of Jesus is the best way just because you grew up with that yeah. idea. Like, explore it for yourself yeah. because the Lord is true and he'll bring truth to you.
Yeah.
And so I think that in summary, I know that this is kind of like an abstract and all over the place conversation, so I'm going to try to make it more clear here. In summary, truth and morality, I'll define it again. Truth and morality is... morality is the value system that you operate with,
yep.
your sense of right and wrong. And then truth is an idea or a statement that can be tested against reality.
Yeah.
And as Christians, our call is to behave in a way that shows the truth and the beauty of the Christian moral system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the answer to some of the chaos and the darkness and the confusion of right. The misinformation, the individualism of our day.
Yeah. That's good.
Is that really helpful?
Good. No, I think that's good.
Okay, good.
I've enjoyed it. I feel like I've learned something.
I know. I want to talk more about yeah. it, but we don't want to talk literally for hours because we can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us for episode number 6. We hope to see you back next time where we will be talking about the beauty of nature.
Yeah.
See you then.
Bye. Thanks for joining us for that conversation. We hope you enjoyed it. If you're interested in finding out more, you can follow us on Instagram or head over to our website at thescripturesociety.com.